and nobody has yet to equal Udo Kier's liver on the end of a spear in Flesh for Frankenstein. That is the 3D effect to beat.
Justin Souther, film critic with The Mountain Express.
And I'm Ken Hackey, the other film critic with The Mountain Express.
We're sitting in the cinema lounge at the Carolina Asheville, Hendersonville Road.
And we are...
Elitist Bastards.
That's right.
I'm waiting to the point where you say elitist and then I say bastard.
Oh, okay. Well, we could do that.
No, maybe next week.
Okay.
Well, the week before last, we had... asked for reader emails. I believe we got one.
One. But it had more than one question.
Yes, it had two questions.
And it came all the way from Australia. Now, that's pretty impressive.
And then last week, which makes us internationally famous.
It does, yes. We are international.
And so what happened was last week we didn't have time to answer this letter.
Something like that, yes.
So this week we're going to.
All right.
So the letter was sent in by Mr. Jeremy Dillon.
Yes, Jeremy Dillon from Australia.
Yes, and we don't have it printed out, but I remember pretty much what he was asking.
Well, that's a good thing because I don't.
Okay, well, his first question was, what director or directors, I guess, from the beginning of the decade have you been... I believe what he was asking was, is there anybody that we've been surprised with the way they've turned out or disappointed in the way they've turned out as the decade has gone along? Anybody promising that has or has not lived up to the hype or maybe surpassed what we thought they were going to do?
Well, I think Wes Anderson has surpassed what I thought he was going to do. I think David O. Russell has done less movies than I was thinking he was going to do.
So I guess his last one was 04.
It's either 04. Yeah, I think it's 04. And I'm extremely disappointed that Chris Weitz did not follow up About a Boy with material that was in the same league as About a Boy. And he did a Twilight movie. And then, of course, there is Bill Condon, who made Gods and Monsters, who made Kinsey, who made Dreamgirls, which was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. And who wrote the screenplay for Chicago. Darkness has fallen on Mr. Condon. He has signed to film the last two Twilight movies and pretends to be pleased about it, which is even more distressing.
Well, my answer, the thing for me is that 10 years ago I was watching movies completely different than I do now.
Yes, it was a mere boy in a beardless youth.
Yes, I wasn't really paying attention to these things, so I can't really say that there's anybody I've been surprised or disappointed with. I guess we have some good news that Guillermo del Toro isn't messing around with Hobbit movies anymore, even though he's wasted the last 2 years.
Yes, but I'd rather see him waste 2 years and come back and do something that I want to see, like Frankenstein, than to see him waste another 3 or 5 years on a couple of Hobbit movies that I really don't care about.
Of course, we're assuming he's going to come back and do something interesting instead of...
Well, that's true, of course. He may come back and sign for the as-yet-unscripted Twilight sequel. Who knows?
Yes. So. And I would agree with, if I could, I don't know, looking back over, I guess, hindsight, Wes Anderson, I think.
Delivered
getting,
more than you would
yes,
have. Yes, yeah,
he's continuing to, and has really, if you look at a director of the last decade, I'd say he stands out. Like, if you had to name someone...
Yes, and I never would have said that when I first saw Royal Tenenbaums. So, yeah, he's definitely gone further than I would have expected.
And Jeremy's second question was our thoughts on the fad for 3D films, and do we see them sticking around? Is the public going to get tired of them at some point?
That's exactly how long they will stick around, until the public gets tired of them.
How long do you think now? But we've seen a lot more.
That's true.
But we're also paying the $3.
I've seen Hannah Montana in 3D, and that's...
You've seen the Jonas Brothers.
I've seen the Jonas Brothers in 3D.
Yes.
Hell, which holds no surprises for me.
I don't know. It's a hard thing to tell when... I'm assuming some people are going to get...
People are bound to get fed up with it. I know people are getting fed up with it being retrofitted on movies.
Right, because... They were not. The Shyamalan film, that last Airbender that's coming out soon, was not originally made for 3D.
No, nor was Clash of the Titans, right. And people were very underwhelmed by the 3D effects in Clash of the Titans.
Right.
I still think it's scary that the most intelligent use of 3D that I've seen, the film that most benefited from it, was My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Right. But that seemed to... And this is about the only reason I'm looking forward to Piranha 3D, is that 3D really works best when it's cheesy and gimmicky.
And tied to a gimmick, that's true. But the thing about My Bloody Valentine was it was obviously really designed for 3D. Everything right. about it was designed to work with 3D, not just the flying dismembered jaw effect. It was the set design, everything, so that it actually had a real sense of depth, unlike, well, really just about anything else I've seen.
Right.
Including the highly praised Avatar.
Yeah, that was the first time. My Bloody Valentine was the first 3D movie I've seen that I really felt like, wow, I can tell this is in 3D. Like, there's just not a few things that are here and there.
Right.
And I think that, and it also...
It may have been the first one that didn't give you a headache, too.
Right. And as far as Avatar goes, that was the 3D effect for that, I think, just sort of whatever importance James Cameron was trying to place on that movie, I think... The 3D, and not just the 3D, but the fact that he had cheesy things like people spraying squirt guns at the screen.
Like, well, which is had pretty a guy, much on, you know, a guy with arrows sticking out of him.
Yeah, which is pretty much frame, on par with the popping popcorn from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, but if you're going to do that kind of thing, then nobody has yet to equal Udo Kier's liver on the end of a spear in Flesh for Frankenstein. That is the 3D effect to beat.
So, we're hoping that we get that.
Yeah, but...
That's our answer to the 3D question.
Yes, Udo Kier's liver.
Well, Ken, rumor has it that you watched Prince of Persia this weekend. Is that true?
Well, rumor would be correct in this case. I did indeed see Prince of Persia. Well... Have to take that up with the birdie,
yes.
But yes. Yes, I did see it. What can you say? It's fine for what it is, which of course doesn't tell you anything. It's like an old Douglas Fairbanks swashbuckler. It even reproduces some of the type of tricks that Doug Sr. used to perform in his silent movies. And it does them pretty well. Of course, they've been a little bit CGI goose these days, so they're not quite the, this is all Doug. Of course, all Doug was never all Doug. There's some stunt doubling going on that we didn't talk about at the time. But it's a silly story, but it has the production values. It has an excellent bad guy and a nice... character part for Alfred Molina, and really the whole thing comes down to this, though, for me.
Right. Which I know. With your,
yes.
I actually saw part of this.
The movie has an ostrich race and a small ostrich stampede. Now, how can you not cut some slack for these things? They should have been bigger, and Bruckheimer should have figured out a way to get Jake Gyllenhaal and Gemma Arterton onto ostrich back.
Right.
And he didn't. And I can't believe that I am suggesting that Jerry Bruckheimer missed a chance for excess. But he did.
How would you say that Jake Gyllenhaal action star works?
Well,
because that seemed like, from a casting standpoint, the biggest.
It doesn't really. Okay. I mean, he's perfectly adequate, but he's no more than adequate. I mean, he's. I think in my written review, I said that he had the advantage over Doug Fairbanks Sr. that you didn't want to take a tranquilizer gun to him.
Right.
He had the disadvantage that he's got zero charisma. So it's sort of a wash there. I mean, you don't hate him, but you don't think, wow, this is, you know, really a great action star, because he's not a great action star. He's a great CGI character. And there's no heat at all generated between him and the leading lady. So it's really up to the bad guy. I probably shouldn't reveal who that is, but let me just put it to you this way. No man wearing this much eye makeup who is not a rock star can be trusted.
Well, this week I reviewed Sex and the City 2.
You reviewed it, but
I was going to add.
All right, add it.
That Ken, in some sort of fit of martyrdom.
Martyrdom is the word, yes.
Decided he was going to not only watch Sex and the City 2 with me, but remind me every day this week that he watched it. So, we have both
seen this film.
That's
not fair. I didn't see you on Monday.
No, I'm pretty sure I didn't talk to you on the phone. Did I? No,
yeah,
I did yesterday.
You did.
You reminded me that you watched Sex and the City 2. So,
I didn't talk to you on Sunday.
That's true.
Or Saturday.
That's true.
Therefore, I have 2 days of not reminding you.
But nevertheless, we both watched this.
And it is abominable.
Yes. It's front runner. No, I don't. Front runner for worst film of the year?
I'd have to think about that, but it's certainly up there.
It's in top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2.5 hours of.
Yes.
Tedious, awful dialogue and acting and.
And no plot.
No. No, it's
there's
just
no
this
plot.
Compendium of relationship troubles and them sitting around tables eating fruit and talking about how their boyfriends don't love them. Well, I guess only they're all married, actually. But.
Yeah, except for Kim Cattrall,
who's
perpetually on the make.
Yes.
We've thrown in her having menopause now, so we have a kind of a plot wrinkle there. You've neglected to point out that the movie opens at a gay wedding.
Yes.
Which
we're constantly reminded is a gay wedding. It's not,
oh yes,
it could
it's
just
not
be
just
a
wedding.
Wedding.
It's a gay
and
wedding.
And it's not a wedding between two people.
It's between two gay men. And it leaves no stereotype untouched.
We even get Liza Minnelli.
Yes, Liza Minnelli performs the wedding ceremony. Yes, we're not making that up. And there's, what, about a 16 or 20 men gay chorus in white dinner suits with white top hats singing show tunes. And the relationship between the characters
we
know as the Sex and the City girls.
Right.
It's pretty much like, and they make nice pets.
Right. It's a nice accessory for.
Yeah.
Upper class white women to have a gay man,
yes. However, this is not really the point of the film. This is just to get to the point of the film. The point of the film is to get them to Abu Dhabi,
where it sort of gradually becomes some sort of feminist.
Yes, because cleavage proves to the local women that they're oppressed. That and the girls performing I Am Woman karaoke style.
Yes. But they only really get extremely feminist once they start getting in trouble with these.
Once the big Arab fat cat is no longer picking up the $22,000 a night hotel bill,
they decide
to become.
Abu Dhabi's not so hot.
That's right. So. Prior to that, it was merely inconvenient.
Yes.
Now it's oppressive.
Yes. It's pretty. Just garish film.
Vile.
Yes.
Abominable.
And it's not so much that we aren't, like, guys who don't get it. It's just not, it's not good.
No, it's not good. No, no. And
it's pretty much underperformed, right?
Yes. Yes, in fact, after all of the dust settled, it was actually beaten by Prince of Persia.
Ah, really? Well, you saw what is opening at the Fine Arts this Friday, which is Secret of Kells.
Yes.
And it was nominated for
an Oscar. Anime. Yeah, it was. There was no way up against Up and Fantastic Mr. Fox that it had even a slim chance of winning. But it was nominated for an Oscar. I can kind of see why. It's a lot of it's going to depend on your tolerance for Celtic myth, especially Celtic myth that's made up as you go along. I mean, there really is a Book of Kells, and the movie essentially purports to tell you how it came into being, which, of course, nobody knows, so it's pretty much made up out of whole cloth, involving fairies and enchanted forests and snakes that swallow their own tail and other unlikely events. It is not a great movie. It is a unique-looking movie, however. Not right away. It takes a while for you to start getting the real feel that the movie is supposed to look like an old illuminated manuscript. And once that really kicks in, the movie is a visual treat, even though the story is no great shakes and a lot of the animation is not a lot better than Saturday morning cartoon side-to-side flat animation. It's been suggested that that's meant to reproduce the feel of the fact that there was no perspective and pictures of that day.
Right.
But considering that some of the film is done with some sort of multi-plane camera setup, that doesn't seem like the best answer to me. I think it's just that we all know side-to-side animation is a lot easier and cheaper to do than animation that comes forward and back. But as far as looking like something you've never seen before, it does manage to do that. And right. For that reason alone, I'd say it's worth seeing. And this Thursday, we have, as usual, our Thursday Horror Picture Show, which is at the Carolina in the Cinema Lounge.
Which we're sitting in.
Which is what we're sitting in, yes, currently, even as we speak.
Yes.
Yes. And
it's at 8 o'clock.
It's at 8 o'clock. And
completely free.
Completely free, yes. No strings, no nothing.
No. You do want to get here early. We
yes.
had our biggest turnout last week for Frankenstein. We had 74 was what we
74
decided.
74 people, yeah. And we had every possible chair, bench, uh-huh, beanbag, and part of the floor.
Yes.
Used to make this work out. So,
but this week we're showing Ken Russell's Lair of the White Worm, which is not the brand name that Frankenstein is.
No.
But we still recommend. If you
but
want
it also
the good
isn't
seats.
80 years old like Frankenstein.
No, that's true.
So you know it's got that kind of working for it, and it's very popular. It's a film that it's hard for me to realize this because I'm ancient, but it's a film that was the introduction to Ken Russell for an awful lot of people.
It's probably his, would you say it's his most accessible or the closest thing?
Yes, it's his most, that you don't have any flights of fantasy that are going to throw you off. It's
no.
not,
and the,
the narrative is straightforward.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it does, if you want it to, it does work as nothing but a simple horror picture. A somewhat comedic horror picture with a fair amount of sort of cheesy gore, a giant monster, a magnificent leather-clad, when she's clad at all, vampire snake woman played by Amanda Donahoe. You've got Hugh Grant looking like he may enter puberty at any day. He's so young. And lots of skin.
Yes.
There's a lot of skin.
And Peter
Capaldi.
Yes. Who some of you may know from the gentleman who's very excellent at swearing in The Loop.
Yes, that is true. This is He's much younger, and he doesn't swear.
No.
He plays the one half of the heroes, the other half being Hugh Grant, and he's a Scots archaeology student.
Very good giant worm made from a Volkswagen.
Yes, the front
beetle.
Of the mouth of the worm is partially made from a Volkswagen Beetle, and it works surprisingly well, even knowing that.
Very good theme song. Very
catchy. Yes, the theme song is very popular. What does Hugh Grant refer to it as? Rural rock,
something,
I think, in the course of the film. And Ken Russell once went to a screening of this somewhere in Europe where it was not a place where English was spoken. And although a great deal of the audience could not speak English, they all knew and sang the Dampton Worm with the film. So if anybody is moved to sing tomorrow night, well, go ahead. Not tomorrow night, Thursday night.
Yes. Well, by the time this is up,
it should be
tomorrow night. But for the people that saw Gothic, and even the four people who walked out of Gothic,
yes,
this is a much different animal.
Very different animal, very different proposition. This is...
I don't feel like you need to be prepared for Ken Russell. I think in a lot of cases, and this is people of my generation, unfortunately, have not had that.
They haven't been Russellized.
No. And so I feel like when we sat down to watch Gothic and it started, I realized we should have warned most of these people because they have no idea what... I feel like if you know what you're getting into, it's much easier.
That's probably true.
But in this case, I don't feel like...
No, you don't really need to know anything to get into this one.
No. Tuesdays, we're doing the newly formed Asheville Film Society, and we're having screenings for those.
Also at 8 o'clock, and
yes.
Also in the Cinema Lounge,
and
which is where we are.
Yes. And also, get there early, because...
The first one was Blood Simple, and the first one was... just about as packed as Frankenstein.
Right, and tonight, as we're an hour away from showing Rushmore, we're not sure what we're going to get. We're expecting a good turnout, so...
It has all the earmarks from everything I've been told, so...
Yes.
So you might want to consider that. This next week, we are showing Rob Epstein's documentary, The Times of Harvey Milk, and... We're doing this primarily as something for Gay Pride Month, which June is, but we're also doing it because this really is a fantastic documentary, and this is coming from someone who, as a rule, does not really like documentaries. Even if they're about something that I'm interested in, they usually have a one-time viewing shelf life. I saw this, I went out and bought this on Laserdisc. I have shown it to any number of people over the years. This is easily the documentary that I have seen more often than any other, and I've never actually grown tired of it. If you've seen the Gus Van Sant film, this is a wonderful companion piece to it, because among other things, you'll see how heavily the Van Sant film drew on this work. It does not take away from the Van Sant film. They have slightly different aims. But it is different in tone, but they have a very similar cumulative emotional power. So,
is that where the appeal lies for you?
Yeah, I think that is what the appeal is. Is the fact that I've never gotten out of this movie with my eyes dry, and you know, and I think that's a remarkable achievement on something, especially if it can do it on more than one occasion.
Right.
When you know where everything is going, you kind of know where everything's going anyway, because it starts out with Dianne Feinstein announcing that the mayor and Harvey Milk have been shot
right.
to death.
And I assume people especially know now since...
Yes.
Milk.
Because of the Milk movie. Yeah, and of course the film, The Case, is also famous because of the... never actually used, but it was popular in the press, Twinkie defense for Councilman
right.
Dan White, that, you know, that part of the reason that he lost control and shot these people was because he'd been eating junk food.
So, this week we have, what all do we have? We have Get Him to the Greek.
We have Get Him to the Greek, which looks like Bargain Basement Judd Apatow.
Yes, well,
That's not very far down, but...
No. Well, no, it's one of these... Is he producing this one, or is it just...
Yes, he's producing this one. It's directed by the same man who directed...
Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Which is one of the... Of all of the Apatow...
produced films, I think it's probably the best one.
I liked it a lot better than I felt I should have, so...
Yeah, well, this actually borrows a character from that.
Right.
The burnout, obnoxious rock star, Aldous Snow, played by Russell Brand, and they built an entire film around him, which may or may not be a good thing.
But he probably was one of the better things in...
Yes, but
Forgetting
there's
Sarah
a difference in between...
A few minutes. Of
and 100 and some odd
right.
minutes of him.
So,
Jonah Hill, who is in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, is in this too, but he's not playing the same character,
right.
which is a little bit confusing.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of comes under the heading of, we'll see. The early word on it is that it's really raunchy and therefore, according to some people, really enjoyable.
The last time I heard that, I was sitting through MacGruber.
All of two weeks ago,
So,
and it was some of the same people saying it, too. So.
Yes. I guess I will find out. I'm assuming I'm reviewing that, correct?
You are reviewing that because...
Because Marmaduke is coming out.
Because Marmaduke is coming out.
Yes.
And it is my lot in life in order
I refused months ago to watch Marmaduke.
Justin, in fact...
And finally, I have not...
Threatened.
Yes.
To quit if he had to watch Marmaduke.
And it worked, surprisingly.
Surprisingly, it worked.
Did not pull my bluff.
I don't really believe that he would have quit, but I suspect that he would have made my life miserable in some fashion.
Yes.
So, it's just as well, but I cannot tell you how much I am not looking forward to seeing perhaps the lamest comic of all time turned into a feature-length film for the express purpose, as near as I can determine, of tormenting me.
It could be Fred Bassett, the movie. Wouldn't that be
good
worse?
It could be Family Circus, but I think that has potential.
Well, if you're Christian families, I think
well, you know,
they would...
The ultimate voyeurs, dead grandma and grandpa that are always hovering behind everything you do. I mean, that's
so
that has potential.
So how about a Family Circus horror film?
I always thought the Family Circus was kind of a horror.
Well,
so, you know, they don't have far to go.
Yeah, dead grandparents.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, the problem for me with Marmaduke, other than the fact that the strip itself is not funny, stems from the fact that it has one basic concept. He's a dog. He's a large, clumsy dog. He causes trouble. That's about it. I don't know where you're going to go with that.
That's a better setup than a lot of movies, though.
Good. You want to watch it?
No, not really.
I don't think so.
And what else is this week? Killers?
Killers, yes.
Ashton Kutcher as spy.
With a license to kill.
Yeah. Which
this
is
man's lucky to have a license to tweet.
First time I saw that film, or not the film, but the trailer, I haven't seen the film yet. It was 10 seconds into it, and you could pretty much guess where this was going. It was, oh, he's a spy, she doesn't know.
Well, it's kind of like a half-assed remake of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes, and I also get the feeling that they found out about that Cameron Diaz, Tom Cruise thing.
It does feel like a cheap knockoff of, what is
that
called?
And even if they
Night
didn't know
Day.
About it first, they had to get it out before Night and Day.
Well, yeah.
So, it looks...
I mean, let's look historically speaking here. Has Ashton Kutcher ever carried a movie?
No.
Has Katherine Heigl ever actually carried a movie?
Not by herself.
Exactly.
So
I don't think the two of them together are exactly going to be box office dynamite.
Whenever you get one of these films with a couple of B-list celebrities, especially. And then you look at the rest of the cast and it's all like C-list comedians.
And Tom Selleck.
Yes. So it,
I'm not sure what he's doing in there, except that.
Well, what else does Tom Selleck have to be doing?
Well, there is that too. Yes. So.
You act like Tom Selleck is some bastion of.
No. Okay. I just don't understand. My whole point was not that he was demeaning himself by being in this. It was that, is there an audience for Tom Selleck that will, you know, are there people that would actually pay money to, oh, wow, Tom Selleck.
When
Tom
Someone's Selleck mother, briefly, I'm sure.
But look, when Tom Selleck briefly had a TV, when he, his TV career was one thing, when he briefly tried to have a movie career, that never worked out so well.
Well, maybe this is.
Some of the movies weren't even that bad, but nobody went to them.
Right. Well, maybe this time, Tom Selleck, superstar.
Maybe. Tom Selleck, super character actor.
Yes.
Seems far more likely.
Okay.
And then there is the one possibly promising-looking thing of the week, which is Splice.
Which does look... It sort of reminds me of... I keep thinking of that... of It's Alive, for some reason.
The Larry Cohen picture?
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little bit. I think it also... I think it probably is less cheesy and is going to veer a little bit more towards a kind of David Cronenberg body horror type thing. But I mean, it's got Adrian Brody in it, which is that's definitely a step in the right direction. Sarah Polley's not bad.
And Adrian Brody's been has he made anything bad in a while?
Hey, I'm glad you put the "in a while" in there because I'm sure there's something.
No, there's definitely stuff that's
There's nothing that will ever. It took me a long time to get past his Brody in the Hood Diet Coke commercial with the.
But
low
he's
rider
redeemed
Chevy.
Himself pretty.
Yeah, but pretty he has definitely redeemed himself. There's no question of that. And of course, there is the fact that, granted, it's merely in an executive producer capacity. But the last time Guillermo del Toro put his name on somebody else's horror picture, it was The Orphanage, and that turned out to be one of the really good new horror films.
We're due for. Usually we get one.
Usually
really
there's one really good sci-fi horror or plain horror film
a year. And I can't really remember one from last year. Like a really good one.
Give me a week or two, and I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Mull
it over.
One. Yeah.
See what you come up with.
So I guess that's it for me. And I'm Ken Hanke.
I'm Justin Souther. We're both film critics for the Mountain Express, who have
brought you this podcast.
Yes, hopefully spectacular podcast.
Oh, certainly.
We gave it
our best shot for today, and so did our magical producer, Mr. Steve Schanefeld, who makes us sound almost coherent through the magic of editing. So we'll be being elitist bastards again next week, and until then,
same. Bastard time.
Same bastard channel. Yes.